Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of September 2nd, 2016. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. So, D.R., I recently heard that Pope Francis, a climate hawk papal power, let's just say, he made some rather strong statements about climate change over the last few days, didn't he?
Yes, it was reported in The Guardian that in a message, quote, to mark the Catholic Church's World Day of Prayer for the Care of Creation, Francis called upon Catholics to add climate action to their list of moral duties. He specifically said that, according to The Guardian, quote, he called for care for the environment to be added to the seven spiritual works of mercy outlined in the gospel that the faithful are asked to perform throughout the Pope's Year of Mercy in 2016, and he urged Catholics to reflect upon the culture of consumption that leads to the climate crisis.
Holy mackerel. I mean, that seems like a rather strong statement from the Pope. Would you agree?
Definitely. He is, in essence, telling the fossil fuel industry to go to hell.
Probably not in so many words. But I think that the Pope has, as we've said before, has enormous power. And I think that he has had an impact. And this can only kind of up the ante, right? I mean, to actually basically sort of characterize... I mean, did he go so far as to say it was a sin to not... I mean, I suppose if you're moral, there's a distinction between the right moral work that you ought to be doing and what's a sin, right? I mean, but still in all, that's a profound statement, huh?
Yes, and it definitely reaffirms what he wrote in the encyclical Laudato Si last year. He writes, quote, "We must not be indifferent or resigned to the loss of biodiversity and the destruction of ecosystems. Because of us, thousands of species will no longer give glory to God by their very existence. We have no such right," unquote. Very forceful.
Yeah, and I guess that it is an interesting, again, it takes a long time for this stuff to seep in, but the idea of consumerism as being a core... bad thing, and you know it is an interesting question because consumerism as an ism is only come around in the last 50 to 100 years, right? The idea that you should be a consumer of stuff and that's your first kind of it's never spoken quite that way, but it's like your first duty in life is to consume stuff to keep the economy running. That whole conception is pretty fragile and pretty recent, and for the Pope to stand up against it. You know, who knows? I mean, more and more people may take that to heart. Right?
You know, it's interesting in his criticism of consumerism. This is we're approaching the 2-year anniversary of the publication of Naomi Klein's book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate. And if you think about all the people who try to discredit the book, thanks to the words of Pope Francis, they don't have a prayer of discrediting what she wrote in that book.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's Pope Francis has now said that, generally speaking, humans should refrain, I guess, from, I'm not going to put words in the Pope's mouth by any means, but sort of refrain from the consumerist mentality and recognize the responsibility to care for the earth and, I suppose, the people who live there, or here, depending on how you look at it. I guess it's not that big a jump to go from that to a particularization, maybe, shall we say, of the Pope's thinking, which is much more relevant to climate hawks. So here's what I would like to put in, not in contrast, but sort of as in parallel with the Pope's statement, is that out in California, as an example, so I saw an article in the LA Times that talked about the following thing, that California is collecting revenue from the cap and trade system that they have instituted. And that revenue is now piling up, and of course the legislature and the governor can't get their can't all get their heads around a budget or a real way to spend the money, right? So there's a problem there. But there's mm-hmm. a growing complaint that the money that's being collected is primarily being directed at well-to-do communities and not at the less well, the low-income communities. Mm-hmm. You know, basically saying that it's a great thing to let everyone have a let everyone in quotation marks have a discount on their Tesla, which mm-hmm. basically means it's subsidy for the rich because somebody living in a poorer section of Los Angeles just isn't going to buy a Tesla, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it comes. I mean, how do climate hawks fairly make sure that sort of the exchange of money that is going to happen one way or the other around carbon pricing, how that goes fairly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen anything about that?
Yes, there was a great piece in the LA Times about this, touching upon, you know, the reality that climate change is going to disproportionately affect the poor and the underprivileged. It was a point that we've mentioned before was reaffirmed in the segment of Years of Living Dangerously, discussing the effect that Superstorm Sandy had on the Red Hook section of Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a controversy that's also been reflected in Washington State with the debate over the I-732 carbon tax and the idea if you make a carbon tax revenue neutral, the revenue will not go to the communities that will be disproportionately impacted by human-caused climate change. So there's a big dispute among members of the legislature, particularly certain members of the legislature representing disadvantaged communities, basically saying that our communities are not receiving the benefits mm-hmm, of mm-hmm. the revenues raised by cap and trade, and they want a redress of this particular grievance.
And part of the article that I saw in the LA Times, there was, the woman who made the statement, who's head of some California Air Quality Board or something,
mm-hmm.
basically said, oh, yeah, well, you know, low-income people benefit from the program also because they get to breathe free. They get to breathe cleaner air, mm-hmm. which is kind of cold comfort, right? I mean, I suppose you could say that it certainly is true, but it's hardly mm-hmm. the kind of response you want to give to people, especially if money is being handed out to other people to buy Teslas, right? Which mm-hmm. I want electric cars and all, but I want the money to go out fairly because it is it's critical to the success of this whole program that it be seen mm-hmm. as that. When I say the whole program, I mean the entire. I mean you and I, or at least I, talk incessantly about the idea that there's going to be a huge financial transfer from mm-hmm. some people to some people, right?
Yes.
Either the oil companies are going to keep getting richer and everyone else is going to be basically left behind as the environment degrades, mm-hmm. or there's going to be some reverse transfer where the price of carbon is actually paid. And the question is, once that price of carbon is paid, how is that revenue sent out back into the world? Mm-hmm. And so it's a question of how we do it, not if we do this transfer. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's important that that huge program be transparent and fair, because that's the only way you're going to you're going to maintain it, I think.
You know, it's interesting within the context of something that I think I've mentioned before. The comedian Bill Maher is always going on and on about how one of the wonders of California is that they don't have. They have very, very few what he would classify as right-wing politicians. And I would turn that around and say, if they really have so few right-wing politicians, why can they not construct this program or tailor this program in a way that the economic benefits redound to the disadvantage? Because if you have few right-wing politicians, no one will accuse you of redistributing wealth or socialism or welfare state politics. You ought to be able to move boldly in order to make sure that all communities are ameliorated by the impacts of climate change through this program.
Right. It's an interesting the article, again, so we're keying off a lot on this article, but it was saying that the gasoline – It was not a gasoline tax. It was some move to reduce the amount of gasoline to be used by 50%. It came a couple of years ago, right?
Yes, to cut petroleum consumption by 50%.
And we talked about it a lot because, of course, the fossil fuel companies were adamantly opposed to it. But it turns mm-hmm. out that some of the politicians representing the disadvantaged communities were opposed to it because they knew they were going to get – there was nothing coming for them to offset, mm-hmm. you know, the increased cost of the gas. And so they mm-hmm. weren't ready to jump on board. And so crafting the whole question of how do you and I guess it seems to me the obvious or one obvious way to – address the fairness issue, which is essentially an environmental justice issue, blah, blah, blah. But instead of giving rebates to electric vehicles, which of course is nice, I mean, it is probably better to push money into residential efficiency and better homes for people in disadvantaged neighborhoods, right? Mm-hmm. And better public transportation. Definitely. I mean, that's a way that benefits, you can equalize the distribution of that money.
Mm-hmm.
It's an important question. And I think that let's just, of course, we're sitting here in Massachusetts looking across the great divide to California, right? So we say, oh boy, yep, they're not distributing their money properly, or they have these issues. Here in Massachusetts, we have the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, as we've mm-hmm. talked about, and we're going to talk about that probably next week, but we've bragged about it in the past as being a pretty good program. Mm-hmm. At least from what I can see in the various websites, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative plows a fair amount of its money back into residential efficiency programs that are available,
yes,
to everyone, right?
Yes.
If you drive up Route 93 going into Boston, you'll see big billboards that talk about Mass Save, right? Mm-hmm. MASSSAVE, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you can get these benefits. Now, you can wonder whether or not the Mass Save program is being administered efficiently, right? Do you really, when they come in and sort of inspect your home and they give you a bunch of light bulbs, is that really worth, you know, the whole thing? But still, mm-hmm. in all, the effort is aimed at a broader segment of the population. And I think that's a more in keeping with the kind of thing I'd like to see, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
Definitely. Definitely. Definitely.
So you go through, right? You go from the Pope, you go to California, you go here to Massachusetts. And then I guess I want to bounce back up to the question of a national carbon tax, right? Now, mm-hmm. it seems to me that you and I, again, have spoken multiple times in the show about a concept called fee and dividend, right? Where there's mm-hmm. a fee for carbon, and then that fee, all those revenues that come from the fees are put in a big bucket and divided out by Social Security number, for example. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think that's more a better way to distribute funds to disadvantaged communities, or does it need to be more targeted? I don't really know. I'm just sort of posing a question out there.
Yes, it's a great question, and obviously, you know, as opposed to what's going on in California, you do have to be concerned about whether or not sending things out as a dividend is going to be a demonized by opponents of the concept, and two, how the arguments of those opponents can be neutralized by supporters of the concept. That's going to be a big challenge if there is a scenario next year where a fee and dividend bill is introduced, because as we've known with, what happened with the Affordable Care Act and the demonization of the public option that led to the removal thereof, when organized interests try to smear a policy, you can kill elements of the policy, if not killing the policy outright.
Right, but and I think you're right, but the question still comes, is it better for, I don't have the right words, right? I'm not politically correct, right? But if you don't have mm-hmm. the money, right, you're in a disadvantaged community, are you better off getting a check for $150 a year or $200 a year or $1,000 a year as your per capita fraction of the fossil fuel price revenue? Is that mm-hmm. better? Or is it better to have that money channeled into community programs that rebuild homes or provide better transit?
Mm.
Someone
would argue that the ideal policy would be both a specific dividend and also money set aside to provide climate proofing homes and what have you. The idea is that how do you get that through the ideological and partisan divides?
Yeah, I think that the idea that, you know, once you say, well, we're going to take some of the money and we're going to put it into these programs, immediately, you know, there's going to be, human nature will be such that there'll be some way that money is gamed. Somebody's mm-hmm. going to make money at it. Someone's going to have a crummy corporation that promises to do residential efficiency and doesn't do the job right, blah, mm-hmm. blah. Whereas if you just give all the money back, everyone knows it's 100% transparent, and you get a check. And, I mean, I guess the only – I mean, I think the fee and dividend thing is the right way to go, but it seems that The risk is that people who get a check, and it's going to start out to be in the few hundred dollar a year range probably, they're not going to connect that to efficiency improvements. Right? Mm-hmm. They're not going to say, oh, I got $150. I better go buy some Dow Corning insulation for my attic, and I get $110 next year. Mm-hmm. People just don't see that, right? So where does it bite that somehow is the fuel? I suppose as the price for fossil fuel goes up, that's where the bite is, right?
Yeah, the theory is that once people realize that if they cut their fossil fuel consumption, they'll have more money in their pockets in addition to the dividend that will reduce emissions overall. And will provide for essentially an expansion of prosperity for all.
Right, and so it's that people. So the stick is the price of your home heating fuel, which you're going to yell and scream about as that goes up. And the carrot is that you're going to get a rebate which will offset that. Right, and that rebate that you get up may not be so easily connected to the increasing cost of the fossil fuel, but I think the theory is that most people would begin to connect the dots and use less fossil fuel, even if they don't connect it to that that paycheck that comes in or the check that comes in every month. I mean, I think the fee and dividend thing is idea is so much more logical because anybody who's getting a check for $100 a month is not going to let that check go away, even at $100 a month, right? You're going to fight for it. It's like Social Security and all that. I mean, people, you get a constituency, and that program is really ensconced for the long term.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So, I mean, I guess the real question, though, comes as what is the responsibility. As the Pope has pointed out, we have a human responsibility to see that the planet's taken care of and that this whole thing is done justly. And from a climate hawk's perspective, that comes to a real knife edge around when we think about the transfer of money that's going to be happening. Right? We call for a carbon price. That money has to be distributed fairly. And then I think reasonable people can have a reasonable discussion about what's the right, fair, and best way to reuse that money.
Mm-hmm. What to do with the revenue?
What to do with the revenue is always an important question.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that, TR. And then I guess the other thing that has come up recently, which I find quite interesting and is bubbled up, is the question of the pipeline through the Dakotas. And all of a sudden, you start looking around, you begin to see things. It seems like the Dakota Access Pipeline, DAPL, Dakota Access Pipeline, has all of a sudden blossomed as an issue in the climate community. Have you noticed that?
Yes, definitely. And I'm glad to see finally some mainstream media attention going to this issue, particularly through the vessel of Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC, who's done two very strong segments about it. It's good to see that he's covering this. Also, there is a great report in The Hill saying that a number of climate groups are asking President Obama to deny and revoke the permits necessary to build the Dakota Access Pipeline. There have been some other stories raising questions as to why the Army Corps of Engineers granted these permits when other agencies, including, I believe, the EPA and the Interior Department, raised questions about the logic of granting these permits. But there is now a push for Obama to say no. And to basically once and for all kill this pipeline. It remains to be seen whether that will in fact happen, but definitely the push is on from, among other groups, the Sierra Club and 350.org, basically saying that Obama needs to step in, needs to intervene, and basically make it clear that, you know, don't ruin people's water, don't ruin people's land, don't ruin people's climate. This could be like one of the last great acts of climate protection that President Obama could engage in by saying no to the permits.
And we're looking at a September 9th, court decision which will, I think, issue an injunction against continuing the construction of the pipeline. I mean,
exactly.
that's the suspense. That's what we're all looking at now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, we will keep our eyes on that. I think that we'll have to leave it there. God bless the Pope. He's doing good stuff. What we'll do is we'll put up some links to some of these things on the website. It's at massclimateaction.net/blog. You can catch us on Facebook at Mass Climate Action. You can catch us on Stitcher, on TuneIn Radio. You can find us on iTunes. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thanks, DR, for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Have a great Labor Day. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.